Hello, this is Mike Olson, Director of Development for Stand Up for Kids Orange County and host of Listen Up, the Stand Up for Kids podcast. On today's episode, we'll be speaking with Dylan, a youth currently enrolled in our programming. We're going to talk to him today about his journey and how faith has played a key role. Hey, Dylan, how are you?
Hi, Mike. How are you? Hi, everyone.
All right. So we're going to slice and dice, and we're going to talk about kind of how you found Stand Up for Kids and what life's been like, and we're going to get there, but I want to start you off with a question that I like to ask young people. And that is, what do you want to be when you grow up?
So what I want to be when I grow up is, I want to be a pastor. So I want to be a pastor at a church, dealing with a congregation in any form, whether that's with adults or college students, like kind of like I do right now, we'll get into that, and or maybe youth, whatever it might be. But so specifically spreading the gospel, another big part and key role of that is heavily participating in missions. So yeah.
Okay, so being a pastor, so two things that stand out to me of that vocation would be faith and belief in some sort of religion or something, and then the ability and willingness and wantingness to do public speaking and get in front of people and share the gospel, spread the gospel. So let's start with the less exciting one. I don't know. That's not the right way to say it, but public speaking. So is public speaking always been a thing that you enjoy?
Yes, but that's a little complicated. So I guess when it comes into my history and what I've done, I might not look it, but I have 7 years in Al-Anon, not specifically Al-Anon, specifically Alateen, but I have 7 years in program. So I have some time under my belt. And so that really exposed me a lot to speaking very deeply, like pouring myself out to a group of people. And then from there, actually, I would be on a committee for the Southern California Alateen Conference at the University of Redlands, where we had all these people from different meetings show up into this one place. And I was there organizing that event like when I was 14, right? So it was a big moment in my life to be like a part of that. And even those people like hold a great big spot in my heart. So program has been really important in just my life in general, but it really did introduce me to the idea of public speaking. And yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard. We did an event actually last week where we were just walking around the Orange Circle and just asking people, hey, is there anything that you need prayer for? Anything that like you need or anything, right? And I swear I had the batting average like the Angels, like probably about one in maybe 10 would actually talk to me. So like really putting myself out there, really not being afraid to like engage with people socially. I think especially with like COVID, people are kind of like a little scared to like talk to people, you know, and it's fine. Like if you need it from me, sure, but you have permission to go out and talk to people and be outgoing, you know?
And you use the Angels reference, and I didn't know if that was a good, does that mean the Angels are good or bad? And I think you're getting to bad.
What I was getting at is, you know, seriously, one in 10 people, like I would ask, hey, how are you doing? But like just stopping on the street just to say hello. And they're like, no, thank you. I don't even want to say hi. Like, I'm just going to keep doing my thing.
Yeah. So to you, you would have expected more people than one out of 10 to take you up on your offer.
Yeah. Or even just to say hello to me. But it takes a little bit of, you know, courage to just put yourself out there, talk to people, you know, engage socially. It's a band-aid that comes to me easier than most people to rip off, but it's still, you know, there's still like a diving board moment where you're like, okay, come on, let's go, you know?
Yeah, public speaking is super hard. And especially in that environment, in that context where you're likely not going to get a positive response. Your batting average is going to be low and you kind of know that going in. So being willing to still broach that, cross that barrier is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm the director of development at Stand Up for Kids. And part of my job is asking people for money and asking people for favors and haircuts. And so I get a lot of no's too. So I can relate on some level to that, but I saw you speak at our car show event and I can't speak like that. So you have a talent and a craft and a lot of experience, it sounds like, that you are bringing to the table when you address an audience.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, in a lot of ways, I feel like a lot of my life story and experience, like even though rough, even though like some parts are really unfortunate, I think there is a beautiful thing actually being made from this. Right. In the sense of like redeeming things that have happened in my life that were tragic, but now are used for fuel of like perseverance and especially for like in my context and faith for the glorification of God.
Yeah. And so we're starting to nibble at some subject matter here and we're going to work our way towards it. But I want to go back to the second component that struck me from being a pastor, and that is the faith component. Short summary of like what does faith mean to you? When did that become important in your life?
Yes. So real cool kind of I'll give you my pocket testimony, if you will. So I actually grew up in a household that was kind of open to faith, right? But it was really this like Americanized Christianity, if that makes sense. Like, oh, like white picket fence, the family and rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, amen, you know? And that was that. And it was an experience nonetheless. And I didn't kind of know any better, but after things would get rough in my life, and especially after we'll unpack this later, but like the death of my mom and my baby sister, like the idea of a God or faith or anything was completely out of the window. And so when I moved and then got introduced to my local church that I'm actually here at right now, I spent a long, large time of my life actually like denouncing this church that I'm actually here right now. I made enemies here. Like people that weren't trying to pick a fight, I was picking the fight. And so actually I have a lot of college peers who for a long part of my life were the vision of know-it-all, too good to know what real life is, distorted reality. They don't know what life's about because I saw some pretty rough stuff like growing up. And so I thought they didn't know what reality was like. And then eventually in my college year, I was actually getting into some really rough behavior, really not treating myself right, really not treating other people right. And I think a lot of this was just insecurity. And I think it continues with how I was treating other people like in high school. About church is I'm insecure about myself. And so I actually let it out on other people. And another real big part about that is walking away from the major that I was in. And I was in music. And a big part of the thing for me and why not pursuing music as a major and a career for me was actually one of the better things to happen to me was knowing where I go wrong. And even though there's a beautiful thing there, it isn't good for my life. And a big part of that was pride. So my whole idea of dealing with homelessness and my mother and everything was that, you know, I dealt with that, but like a phoenix, I'm going to rise up and like become this great genius prodigy. And I had to really humble myself. That's not realistic. That's not reality. And so as much as I was getting mad at other people about what reality was and everything, I was kind of also living a lie of myself. You know, I think we make gods or idols out of things, right? Like, that's what it looks like practically. Like me, like getting the job and getting the paycheck and getting the girl and everything. And that's what reality is going to look like for me and da, 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 da. And so actually Ash Wednesday of 2019, I became of faith and dedicated my life to Jesus Christ. And then from there, it has been for me, a beautiful roller coaster that has not stopped since. And a lot I made amends to so many relationships that I broke off. And I've been pursuing how to be a loving, caring person, you know, and I feel like I'm most of that all the time. But I think everyone has a dark side. Everyone's capable of great evil, right? And so I think just working on that and lowering that capacity of evil just a little less every day, you know? And sure, it might not be evil like murder, but, you know, yelling at somebody or being rude, you know, they're little evils, you know?
How old are you?
I am 20, about to be 21.
Yeah. So you don't talk like a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've been told that.
Yes.
You talk like a 50-year-old philosopher who's like wise beyond his years. It's interesting. Is that the public speaking that helps you? Like, do you read a lot of books?
Well, that's the thing. I actually teach the Bible.
Okay, you teach the Bible.
Current state now. So currently, I have three wonderful young men that are part of what I call my discipleship group, and okay. I disciple them. So that means we read through the Bible together, and then I teach them stuff. And so, for example, we went over the book of Job. Job is a part of the old Tanakh, the Torah, the Old Testament, the Jewish Bible, that is a part of the overall Bible. And what's really cool about the book of Job is it's actually a part of a series of books in the Old Testament called the wisdom literature. You probably know some of this as Psalms, where it's just little snippets of wisdom. And then there's another a book called Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a book that takes the approach of nihilism and then tries to spin hope in showing God's wisdom and plan through everything. And then Job is another book that actually talks about suffering. And it shows this man who does not deserve suffering or punishment, but goes through a great deal. But at the end of the day, learns about the glory of Christ and how even though we might suffer sometimes, that doesn't mean God hates us or anything, but it just means we live in a fallen world in our current state, and that there's great wisdom to also learn out of suffering no matter the cause, right? And so even with things like that, like I can relate to that. And Job also isn't a great guy either. The moment all this suffering happens, he becomes harsh. He becomes real bitter, you know, even though he was this great guy before, but then he learns and he kind of becomes humbled throughout that process. It's really cool. But things like that is not easy. These are not easy pills to swallow just on a Wednesday night, you know? So it's a lot of this every week. It's a lot of talking to people. And basically that's kind of a part of the plan I'm on. And I would say another real big part of this is in my process of becoming a pastor, I'm not so much taking in my current state right now, taking the path of going to a degree, but actually mentorship. And it takes a village. So I have many, many people teaching me how to be wise, through the Lord, be caring and kind. And I do appreciate a comment like that because that means it's kind of working. But, a lot of it is a lot of time into spiritual development for me.
That's interesting. It's very interesting for me. So I'll tell you a little bit about my background. And it's very basic. It's very rub-a-dub-dub. And I'm in my late 30s now. So I got baptized. I went through confirmation. I went to church every week, went to Sunday school, whatever, got to confirmation, which was eighth grade for me. And I did all that because that was required essentially by my parents. Like, you need to do this. It's part of being a Christian. It's part of being, I was a Lutheran. I am a Lutheran loosely. But pretty much beyond eighth grade, it's been a, what's the word? It's been a token thing for me, and I've never really embraced it. And I still haven't now, but I'm curious about it. I'm super curious about it. And I like talking to people like you that like are really informed and, well-versed. But it's, I don't know, there's like something about it that scares me or keeps me away, that I haven't really figured out yet. So I guess maybe a question would be, what got you to embrace, what happened on Ash Wednesday in 2019 that you went from the cynic or the critic or the hater, to then open your eyes or heart or whatever to this subject?
Yeah. So this is actually a really cool story. The church that I would hate, the church that I would actively know I'm not their friend, the church that I would let them know that they are wrong and they don't know what reality is like, would then be the same church that when I was homeless said, we'll give you a job. And so they hired me. I had no background in faith. I was at that point a senior in high school. And so they would give me a job so that I could start saving up money. And my job was literally in the back of a church, right? There's like a little computer for the PowerPoint for the sermon and the worship lyrics. And I was that guy. And my job was to wake up, go to church, sit through two sermons, and hit the PowerPoint button over and over, which would mean I would have to listen. And I loved the music. The music was cool. We have a grand Philips organ. It is beautiful. I loved that part. But when we sat down and listened for the sermons, I would have to listen. And so I actually had a sheet of paper from our pastor, Doug Rumford, and it would have all the notes and all the scripture, like ties in, like saying, oh, this is where this is from, right? Like, oh, talking about challenges and diversity and issues. That's James 2-4. Consider it great joy, brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of various kinds, because the testing of your faith will produce endurance, and let endurance have the full effect of making you mature and complete, right? So all of that unpacked into this one little thing right here, right? So like, I would have to sit through that. And that probably wasn't my favorite part, but like a chisel on my heart over time, every Sunday for a whole year, right? Is when it would get to the point where I would go, you know what? There's a lot of truth in here, especially after in those sermons. Little did he know he was speaking directly to me, right? Like about my questions about God, about how I felt, my confusion, like ways of the world, things like this. Like, yeah. And so that's what it was. So just a lot of that until eventually I actually got involved in some pretty bad behavior, like I mentioned. And it got to the point where I went, well, I know all these things about God, but he could not forgive me about these things, about how mean I was to people, you know, about my scenario. If God didn't really care about me in the sense that now I'm homeless, is that the will of God or things like that? No. Well, we can get into that. And things like that. And also a lot of the behaviors that I was doing, for a long time of my life, I was a shut-in, just staying in my house, didn't talk to anybody, didn't do anything. you know? And so a lot of these things I would go, and then also I got into, let's just say I was in a scenario where I was in a building trying to buy stuff. And the people that I saw there trying to buy stuff that weren't so savory things were scary. They were scary people. And it was a wake up call for me that I would be like this, right? And that this is what could happen, is that instead of the redemption from homelessness, that I could rise above and be this crazy musical genius or whatever, which is an extreme no one should go, or the other extreme of, yeah, and I'm gonna listen to what the world says, is that eventually I'm gonna be a panhandling bum just smoking, and I'm about to die in 3 years, and I'm not gonna do anything about my current living situation, right? Which is also bad and also negative, and is a really skewed idea of what homelessness is, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there's this path in between that I found, is that recovery over time with the faith and love of Jesus Christ and a community around you that cares. And that's what I kind of realized. And on Ash Wednesday, I told that all the bad things that I've done and will do, and even the crazy delusions of grandeur, or that God wasn't going to let me like go into a bad scenario. Well, if I go into a bad scenario, God's going to be with me. Right. And so from that, I dedicated myself to faith, and I was told that all of that could just be forgiven. And that more importantly than anything is that God wants a relationship with you. And so he does that through prayer and through the Bible, like his scripture, right? And that's specifically through Jesus Christ. And that's the other thing. I'm studying theology right now, so we can go into nitty gritty, but I think what you mainly wanted was just my experience and what I went through that night. And that's what it was.
So do you ever think about, so you went through some hairy stuff, lots of really yeah. bad, negative things. And that ended up drawing you into a really good thing. And yeah. if you hadn't, like, do you ever think about like, what if all that bad stuff never would have happened and I never would have got nudged into Christ and the church and this place? Like, where would I be?
I think that's the same thing that when you go to an AA meeting and you go, well, I finally hit rock bottom. So now I'm here. I'm doing something about it. For me, in my mind, things like that, and when it comes to dangerous paths like that, mm-hmm. Rock bottom is an inevitability, right? Even if you're 1 degree down, you still go down, okay. right? The big idea that I sort of thought about it is like an airplane from Hawaii to New York. Okay, you're 1 degree off, welcome to Canada. Like, that's all it takes. That's all it takes. Okay. You know, that's sort of the mentality for me.
So you were gonna get there.
Eventually.
On your current path, you were gonna get there. It might've taken you a little bit longer if.
Yeah, because think about this. I have this big head. I keep going to music school. I get my bachelor's. I start teaching kids. Me and my other musician friends that were doing stuff, you know, they're all smoking. They go, Dylan, come on, finally take a break. You know, enjoy yourself. I know my family history with alcoholism. You know, it just takes, hey, come on, with the wrong people at the wrong place at the wrong time. It's easy to get there. Now, the question is everyone, like, people go through rough stuff. Right. You know, the hardest thing people go through is the hardest thing they go through. Right. Mm-hmm. Which means everyone's dealing and breaking through barriers each day. Right. The response is, what are you going to do about it? Right.
Yeah. And then, so I always want to, I like think about myself and my own situation, kind of based on what you said. And I've had it pretty good. Like, I've never been homeless. I've never had a hardcore drug addiction. Never murdered anyone that I'm going to admit on this podcast anyway. So a lot of really, not all, no, definitely not all, not even all, maybe not even, I don't know what I'm trying to say. For some people, like some people have had that like come to Jesus moment. That's why they call it a come to Jesus moment, I guess. And then that path illuminates, maybe. I've never been in that position yet, I guess. And so while I have this curiosity and I wonder, I think I'm like lazy. I'm a little bit lazy because I am curious, but I don't go and pick up the Bible and try to figure it out because it's intimidating, or it's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but I've never taken the leap and I've never hit that. I've never kind of become spiritual. So that's where I like wonder, like what, even on like, I got a good buddy who is very religious. He's in the same boat as me. He's had a pretty good life, and he in his 20s he found Jesus and found the scriptures, and it really moved him. And he talks the way you talk about different Bible verses, and he gets very animated and excited, and it's inspiring. And I think, I mean, it's work on some level. It's committing to learning. You happen to land in a situation where you got a job that just kind of force fed it to you.
What I don't want is that, oh, Dylan went to this job and was brainwashed and this is what happened. That's not what I want.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's my choice. It was my choice. And it's a choice that I haven't regretted.
Yeah.
I think that's because there's something there, not to sound biased, but.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I keep needing these nudges, I think. And so you're giving me another little nudge to like at least explore spirituality and the why and things like that.
Yeah. Now what I would say, like in response to something like that, is spirituality at itself is like it takes different forms. There's other religions, there's other things, but I think if you want to find God, if you want to find many names that we've given him, right? Mm-hmm. Yeshua, Yahweh, Jesus Christ, any of this that sort of leans towards more of the Christian experience, which I believe is truth, the way, the life, right? Mm-hmm. It is as simple as seek, right? And I think when you find Jesus, the Bible shows us that people have people have strong reactions to Jesus. It's either I will drop everything I have and follow you because you realize like, oh, this is God, right? Or it is put them on the stake, boys. Like this is a danger, right? Like having, you know, such a personal relational God is a dangerous thing, I think, you know? And that's the thing. It's more about engaging in a relationship with Christ. It's not, you're praying to this far off deity. That's not what it is. Yeah. Other religions and stuff, like for example, like Shintoism, it's about a spirit or thing that resides over a place, right? So like the building that I'm in, it could have a ghost or a spirit, right? Or like an Oni or something like that, a demon, right? And that just resides here, but it only is here and has no power and is and is just here, right? And that doesn't, like, that's not what creation and the world reflects, right? Like, the world reflects intelligent design, right? Mm-hmm. And no matter, like, what you look at it, if it's a sunset. Last night for me, it was the middle of the night. I was getting off of work and I just had a real cool, tender moment where I'm walking across the street and I hear screeching and I'm like, is that a bat? Oh, what is it? And no, it wasn't. It was actually a pair of two barn owls. And I was like, wow, that's pretty. That's beautiful. Right. And things like that. Moments of beauty in nature and things like that, or in intelligent design of people. Right. Like, how many things have to work in your body so that you're alive? And how, like, you know, not betting, but like, you know, and how Earth is so far the only planet that we have found that is capable of sustaining such life. Right. And think like there's so many cosmic coincidences or whatever. Right. Or whatever. And I think a matter of that is just having an encounter with Jesus Christ. Right. Seek and you'll find. And so, like, a lot of things, a prayer that I prayed many times when I was coming to faith was, help me in my unbelief. Right. Yeah.
You said something. Jesus is a polarizing figure. So yeah. some people run to him, some people run away from him or want to kill him.
Yeah. Well, I think about this. There's going to be listeners to this podcast that hear me talk about Jesus's name, and it's going to be, ooh, that's weird. Maybe I skip out on this one, you know, or whatever. Here's an exercise. Go to an elevator and say, hey guys, while you're all trapped there, you want to talk about Jesus Christ and see what happens. Okay. And you'll know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. So then the question for me is what makes a believer versus a non-believer? Just the willingness to seek?
The difference between a non-believer and a believer is a believer has surrendered and has become obedient to God. And so for me, I've said things like the Apostles' Creed or things like that. This is all theology mumbo jumbo. Mm-hmm. I can just simply say for us, like, for me, I say and confirm that Jesus Christ is my Lord, and that I pray and have an active relationship with him. And I believe in the truth and the divinity of the Bible. Right. And I act on that. It's not a lukewarm experience where I'm like, yeah. Those are things I kind of believe in. But, you know, God only exists on Sunday. The rest of the 6 days are just for me, right? It is, I wake up, you know, God's there. I'm at work and I'm doing fast food. Well, I pray over the meals, you know, like, it's simple as that. Or, you know, I'm enjoying a meal. God, thank you for this. What a blessing right here, right? Because as much as we forget about God, God doesn't forget about us. And there's a lot of us. There's 7 billion of us, you know.
Let's talk about good versus evil for a moment, because you mentioned
good versus evil. Let's talk about it.
And you said that some people, everybody's got a little bit of evil or a lot of bit of evil in them.
Yeah.
And you can, it's a muscle. It's a muscle on some level that you can train to be less or more, presumably. How do you train that muscle?
So for me, I believe that there's a process called sanctification. Right. Walk with me through this funny exercise. Okay. There's a therapist and there is a husband, and the husband goes, know what? My wife, she's like, not even like my wife. We're going through it. It's rough. Know what? And then the therapist goes, know what? And God tells us to love the ones we're with, right? And be with it. And through thick and thin, go through it all. And it goes, therapist, you don't get it. You don't understand. She's not even like my wife anymore. She's like a neighbor, right? She's mean. She's distant. She's cold. And then the therapist will go, you know what? And Christ tells us to love our neighbors. And then, and they go, you just don't get it. Okay. She's an enemy. She's against me. She's mean and cold. And he goes, you know what? Christ tells us to love our enemies, right? All these like three ideas, right? Like really consider how difficult it is to like be nice and loving and reflecting like God's love through other people, right? Because as much as we can get like in our heads and go, oh, wow, God made me. He knit me in the womb. Like, wow, look at me. Like that's also true of your neighbor. And not only your neighbor, but your enemy. Right. That alone is really hard. So if you want to talk about like good versus evil, right? Evil is us going, yeah, know what? They did something bad to me. Revenge is the way to go. Or you know what? They don't deserve my time. Right. And I will say this. Like I haven't seen Stand Up for Kids to do this, but like you have people that go through recovery, that go through stuff, and while they're still trying to get better, they still are in the realm of like, they don't do great things all the time. And sometimes they hurt the people they're trying to help. And what not the response is to then hit back. You guys don't do that, right? Stand Up for Kids is very kind, very gracious. And I think that is that same thing. Doing good is even when wrong happens to you, you forgive, right? And I think that's how you fight evil.
With grace.
With grace. And that is the gospel. That is the good news, is because we do things like that to God all the time. And because of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, like it's forgiven.
What? So back to me and my lukewarm state. I like to be nice to people.
Yeah.
And if I was a naysayer, I'd be like, well, I'm nice because I like to be nice. Does Jesus have to be the reason for me being nice?
Yeah. Yeah. So like there are tons of really good, nice, loving atheists out there. There are like people are made in the image of God, and God's a real nice, cool guy. Right. So like sometimes people are just nice. But I think the thing you miss out on is the relationship of Christ and the fact that all have fallen short in the glory of God. So I might be nice to people, but deep down in my head, like a corporate CEO, they're very nice. They're very kind, but they, you know, embezzle money. They have these secret relationships that honey doesn't need to know about. There's other things. And even if you don't do that, have you ever just had like
yes.
You're on the freeway and you're like, I could just, man, this traffic jam right now, I'd drive through all these cars right now, right? I see that with myself. Those are like the little echoes of like human evil nature in us. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go, well, I haven't done anything sinful, right? And okay. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen a mirror before, but like, you know, like, I think the thing about true Christianity, true biblical Christianity, is not to go, we are holier than thou. Cause I think that's where as a church, like as a corporate church entity, that's the word we use, like a corporate body, right? That's where we failed, is we go, all you Gentiles, all you non-believers, like look how in the wrong you are. And in the New Testament, Paul tells us, the writer of these letters, right? It was a pastor who wrote these letters to these churches. And he would literally go, don't be mean. Like, why are you like being like this? Right. Show them the glory and love of Christ and like seek and they will follow. Right. Like, you know, like I think true Christianity, biblical Christianity, when executed, is contagious. And I think that's why it's one of the biggest religions. And also why it leans more towards there's got to be some truth in it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it, right. Like a lot of things, like Buddhism does not reflect this. Buddhism says that after following the sevenfold path, you can get to a godlike state. Christianity does not say that. Christianity doesn't say through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, you can reach a godlike state. It never says that. That's Mormonism. Right. Christianity offers to say that, yes, those little nudges, those little voices in your head that tell you to do bad things and stuff. I understand that. I forgive you. Those bad things you've done in the past, it's forgiven. Be with me. And not some personal, not some like unpersonal, like, and I will smite you down and you will die. It is Christ has sent a lifeline to us. And it's a matter of we grab onto it. Right. And how much more will, right, you feel satisfaction in like being with Christ? And then how much more will you be able to be more of a nicer person? Especially following his commands of loving your neighbor, loving your enemy, loving like everyone. It isn't a choice at that point. And to any Christian that goes, and know what, these people, I hate them. You know what to tell them, right? And I think in a lot of ways, like that is how like the church as a body and its entity has just simply failed. Just because God has given us the answer does not mean we execute it, like, right, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are there any connections we can make between homelessness and faith? Like, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. You want to finish? You finished your thing.
I was going to try to figure out a question out of that, but it sounds like you've got some subject matter that you're ready to pull from.
I have a subject matter, but did you have any questions? No. Okay. There is so much. So much symbolism in homelessness and in adoption specifically. And I think a lot of this is tied into the same way, right? So for me, when I became homeless, I got separated from my family, mm-hmm. right? And my dad was not doing savory things either, right? So all these things together, right? Like I was on my own. And I think there's in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, there's these echoes of come home, right? The big thing is the prodigal son is a parable, is a story that Jesus says right? And it's about these two sons and how one stays faithful and remains at home and is with his father and he's great. And he does it right. Right. But one of them goes off on a bender and he finds him in a pig trough. Right. And he's just, what have you done? Right. What are you doing with yourself? And eventually it gets to the point where the son realizes that he just wants the comfort and safety of the father. And so he comes home and the father is excited, right? He goes, he just exclaims and he throws a party for his son coming back home. And that's because he's now back home and safe and they're together. And that relational aspect between them is there. And I think a lot of that stuff can be easily found in homelessness, is that for some circumstances, because it's not every one of our mentees in the program have just gone to addiction and got kicked out. Like it's simply circumstance. The only qualification for being homeless is one without home. That's all it takes, right? So people dealing with stuff during COVID who just lost their home because they couldn't afford it, boom, you're homeless. right? Like that's all it takes. I think a lot of that, and when you see things like that, is you see like brokenness and like hurt relationships and things like that. And what faith calls us to is to come home in Christ, and that through that works can happen, right? Depending on him and depending on obedience, God will be with you. And so for me, like I would pray about support, how I can go through this next chapter in life. How can I receive support through medical care and therapy and mental health and getting my own place? And like answered prayer, Stand Up For Kids is there. Now you're not a faith organization, but I'm saying God moves in weird ways. And I'm proud and happy to say that Stand Up For Kids is have answered prayer. Right? That's a part of my own life and testimony. And easily they have provided therapy, a psychiatrist with low payments for everything. I've been able to afford everything, and we're moving through it. And now we're on the precipice of me moving out, right? I'm not saying it's some cosmic, ooh, mumbo jumbo. Like, you know, I'm just saying it just happens to be the will of God that when I'm obedient to him, that he can pull me out of dark places. I never want to say that a prosperity gospel, believe in God and you'll receive money, because those are like those really toxic relationships on TV where you see it here, pray and know what great money would come to you. And you get those like prosperity gospel churches where they're just stealing money from people who need it. Right. That's not the gospel. Gospel says, and especially when it comes to things like suffering, is that being obedient and following God and wanting a relationship with God, that God will be in our darkest time with us through the mountains and the valleys all the same.
And so were you, just from a timeline perspective, faith and homelessness for you, were you homeless while you were in the faith?
I was homeless when I become a faith.
Okay. And then, but that's what you got out of that through the job at the church. And that's what helped get you into a better place.
Yep. And so then our family moves in all together. I start going to school. I still have these like illusions of grandeur. And then eventually it breaks. Or, you know, I ask God, you know, give me something fulfilling and something to do with life. So then it's like, okay, don't do music. Because as much as it's a beautiful thing, it's a little too pretty and it hurts to hold. Right. So now I do music purely as a hobby. I play the accordion. It's the love of my life. Second to Christ. But you know, that was a bit. I now find so much more fulfillment in my future and in what God's going to do in my life. Bringing that sort of thing of, we've talked about my past and now going into the future. Like what I do now is I help other peers around me. I'm not a pastor yet, but the harvest is plentiful, you know? So my main idea and what I do is just leading out of vulnerability, being able to talk about my past, talk about mental illness, right? Talk about stuff, and not being afraid to just, even though I'm not at a point of leadership, I can still lead through vulnerability and pain.
That's a hard path. For most people.
Yeah, because there's stake in it. There's skin in the game.
Mm-hmm. So it takes a willingness to be vulnerable, because a lot of people would not accept that challenge.
And I think a lot of good things in life require us to be vulnerable for good things to happen. Homelessness can exist, but if you're not willing to go, I'm homeless, I need to do something about this, I cannot be complacent in the behaviors that I'm doing that aren't the cause but are keeping me here, I need to be vulnerable and turn that over to someone. That's what Stand Up For Kids looks like for me. Is it you, as an entity, you guys help, but you have to help people, and you can only help people who are willing to admit there's brokenness in their life.
Yep. You got to be willing to work.
Yeah. And so I know you guys have lost lots of people who you want to help, but they simply don't want the help because they don't see anything wrong.
They're not there yet. They're not ready.
Yeah.
Did you get hit up to be in our gala as an accordion player yet?
I have been told that they would love to have me.
Did you accept that?
I have not been given a formal offer yet.
Okay. I'll consult my people.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think we're getting close to the end. So I'd like you to leave people with some closing thoughts. And I know that's kind of nebulous-y, but you're pretty good at coming up with something. So in the realm of, you know, Stand Up for Kids and homelessness and faith and kind of the conversation that we've had, is there a takeaway that you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, I think if you're in a spot of rock bottom, and if you're in a spot of what's there left, I'm in pure cynicism. There's nothing good in the world. There's nothing for me. I don't think that's true. And I think deep down, you know that too. And so I want you to, like, for me, what I think is best is, I think turning over to Christ and what to do. Yeah. And he will be with you. If you ask him to be there, he will be with you. If you ask him for salvation, he'll bring you. And I think for people who are in the middle, who are kind of lukewarm, maybe a little bit, or somewhere in this middle spot, God isn't a faraway thing that does not want a relationship with you. Right? God wants to be with you. And I want to leave you with that, right? And then through that, he will use you as a vessel if you just let him. And I think for everywhere in between, I think no matter where you're at, I hope that, especially when it comes to homelessness or things like that, that there's hope. There is hope. God did not just leave us here to be in the sandpit and just deal, right? Yeah, I think that looks like different things, you know? Yeah, people ask, you know, God, do something about sickness, do something about vaccines, do something to cure us in our current state of pandemic, and we received the fastest vaccine we've ever made. You know,
coincidence.
But you know what I'm saying? You know, I think that through prayer and that just being obedient and wanting a relationship with God, that God will move. And I think the scariest thing that I experienced recently was me and my college group went on a trip to Zion National Park. And we spend there and we spend time in creation. We spend time playing music and worshiping God. But we also hit the books. We're reading the Bible and we read a whole book compressed in a week, right? And we're spending time. And it's a lot. It's not a vacation for me. It's work. But, oh, I love it. Okay, it's good work. It's like a good workout. It's boot camp. And we're told not to pray to God and whether he and go, prove you're real, right? Prove yourself. But we are told that if we are to do what he tells us to do and being obedient on him, we can kind of go, bet. You want me to be here? Bet. You be here too. And I think when you do that, I think you'll see some mountains move. I think you'll see some scary stuff in a beautiful way. So yeah, if you want to go, God, I bet that I can't be a Christian. 6 weeks, go to a church, make friends. It'll be great. If anything, at the end, you'll have friends. Okay. And you don't need to believe in God, but really engage in a relationship with Christ. And I think you'll get something out of it. That is my challenge. And with anything else, I just hope, you know, there's people out there that care about you. I think if you're hearing this, if you're in that rough spot, if you're a mentee, there's people here that care about you, even if you don't know it. I go to these Tuesday night meetings for Stand Up for Kids, and the camaraderie that I share with these people, they don't even know how much I love them.
I think that's a great place to leave it.
Yeah, there's people out there for you.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, Dylan. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Mike.
Thank you for listening today to Listen Up, the Stand Up for Kids podcast. A big thank you to Gabby Villarreal and Billy Wynn for their production and editing support. Find us on YouTube, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support Stand Up for Kids, please share this podcast with family, friends, and colleagues. Also, check out our website at standupforkids.org/Orange County, and you can email me directly at michaelo@standupforkids.org to learn more. Please also consider a donation to help getting kids off the streets. 92 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to supporting these kids. I'm your host, Michael Olson, Director of Development at Stand Up for Kids, Orange County. Thanks for listening and have a great day.